Parliament. This is Peter Watson once again presenting a weekly radio digest of items headlined or modest, but all selected for your interest and entertainment from the worldwide services of the BBC. London Column. This week, London Column invites you to the royal opening of Britain's rebuilt House of Commons, and to meet some distinguished Americans who have come 6,000 miles to London to grace another royal occasion of quite a different nature. First then, to the ancient Palace of Westminster. 9 years ago, when Hitler's bombs rained down upon London, the Mother of Parliaments received a blow that, although it couldn't kill principles of democratic government, did shatter one of its shrines, the House of Commons. But now, in 1950, a new house has risen, phoenix-like, from the ashes of the old, ready to receive once again the people's representatives, who, for the last 9 years, have met in the chamber of the neighbouring House of Lords. So, to mark the opening of the new house, a royal ceremony performed in the vast and ancient vaulted hall of the Palace of Westminster. 1,700 distinguished personages from Britain and the Commonwealth assembled facing the wide sweep of steps at the southern end, facing a fabulously rich curtain of blue, emblazoned with the royal coat of arms, glistening in floodlit gold. A glowing backcloth for the scarlet-tuniced yeomen of the guard, 8-foot spears in hand, who stood behind the golden chairs of state. Then into the great hall came the procession, officers of both houses, wigged and robed and resplendent in their satins, to their seats flanking the wide steps. Then, the great moment, heralded by a full fanfare from the state trumpeters in their quartered uniforms of cloth of gold. Through the great oaken doors came King George and Queen Elizabeth, not in ceremonial robes, but in the contrasting simplicity of formal mourning dress, and the Queen Mother, the Princesses Elizabeth and Margaret, and other members of the royal family. And when the King and Queen had made their progress to the two golden chairs of state, the Lord Chancellor came forward to present the address from the House of Lords.
Most gracious Sovereign, we, Your Majesty's most dutiful and loyal subjects, the Lords spiritual and temporal in Parliament assembled, beg leave to thank Your Majesty for the most gracious message which Your Majesty has addressed to this House, and to ask permission to express to Your Majesty the unqualified satisfaction with which we have heard that the Commons Chamber has been rebuilt after its destruction by Your Majesty's enemies in 1941, and is now ready for occupation.
Similarly, a loyal address for the faithful Commons from Mr. Speaker, whereafter the King's reply, recalling the long evolution and the testing and proving of Britain's parliamentary system, born on this very spot centuries ago.
This new chamber will stand as a sign to the world of our faith in freedom, of our confidence in the permanence of our common ideals, and of the ties, flexible yet firm, which hold together the peoples of our Commonwealth and unite in brotherhood the freedom-loving people of all nations. For freedom finds expression in this Palace of Westminster, where free men and women can speak in accordance with the dictates of their consciences, yet with that saving grace of humor and readiness to understand the point of view of others, which has ever been typical of our race. Not for us, the silence of suppression. In other places, liberty has perished. But the voice of true democracy is still heard among all our peoples and is a comfort to all those who love and believe in the unfettered expression of honest opinion, a noble aspiration, and sincere of human feeling.
But now for another occasional splendor, albeit of a more informal kind. Every year, the King and Queen lend their presence to a royal film performance in aid of the British Film Industry's own benevolent fund. And on each such occasion, a galaxy of movie stars, American and British, is invited to attend the show and to be presented to the royal patrons. On this recent occasion, the chosen film was The Mudlark, a story of Queen Victoria's time in which that great American actress, Miss Irene Dunne, plays the part of the great lady herself. On the eve of the movie performance and the presentation, we looked in on a reception in honor of the stars, and our reporter Godfrey Talbot corralled some of them for you. And the first he spoke to was, of course, the star of the evening, Miss Dunne.
The thing I want to ask you, Miss Dunne, is did you put in lots of study to play this very important part?
Well, the part in the picture is not one of the largest and longest parts I've ever played, but I do feel that I gave it a very fair share of concentration. And to play the part of Queen Victoria, this great, great English queen, I must say, took a lot of deliberation on my part. And yes, I feel that I have given it the best I know how to give it.
Did you read a lot of books before you played it?
Yes, I did. I read reference books, and they all agree more or less. But I found that when I came over here and met some people, even certain English people who had remembered Queen Victoria, that helped me more than anything else.
Now, the smallest guest at this film reception, but one in whom an awful lot of interest is being taken, is Master Andrew Ray, aged 11 years old, and now sitting beside me on the settee, wearing a very smart blue flannel suit, short trousers, and a bright red tie, and looking much cleaner than he does in this film, I think. Now, Andrew, you play the boy who gets precipitated into Windsor Castle down a coal chute, isn't it?
Oh, yes, that's right, yes.
Well, how did you feel about that? Did you get dirty before you went down?
Oh, I've really been dirty all the way through.
It's a wonderful feeling. Most boys get dirty naturally and like it very much, but there you are being professionally dirty.
Oh, yes, that's right.
And you had to slide around in the mud of a Thames Wharf, didn't you?
Oh, yes, well, I found that rather horrible. Up until 4 o'clock in the morning, I was.
My goodness me, you must have been very sleepy when you got home.
Oh, I was, yes.
Now, here at the microphone, we have Miss Gloria Swanson. How are you feeling about appearing at the theatre on Monday with the King and Queen?
I'm very excited about it. I'm not nervous yet, but that will come later. And, of course, it's an occasion that you put down in your mind and your heart and your diary and your book. You live with it for a long, long time. It's something you carry away as a great important thing in your life.
And now here beside the microphone, looking at me and it with those wonderful large eyes that we know well on the screen, is Miss Claudette Colbert. I'm so glad you've been able to come here. I understood there was a little bit of doubt that either you wouldn't arrive from Paris or that you wouldn't be able to come. However, you've made it quite obviously perfectly
yes.
Well. And you look jolly well. I hope you're quite recovered.
Yes, thank you. I am. Unfortunately, I was quite sick in Paris, but I'm fine now and I'm looking forward to the Royal Command performance on Monday.
You don't have any qualms about appearing before the King and Queen on Monday.
Oh, no. That should be the greatest thrill of my life, I expect.
Well, there'll have been a good many postscripts written home after that great evening. But we've got one of our own from London columnist Alan Melville. Alan?
This is Ella Melville speaking. Only on very rare and royal occasions nowadays do we force ourselves into the white tie and tails, discovering each time we do so that with the passing of the years and the consequent development of the stomach, the dress waistcoat has got considerably tighter and less comfortable, and that an embarrassing and ever-widening gap or hiatus is now evident between it and the top trouser button. Well, such an occasion with all its sartorial snags was Monday night, when the royal family attended the world premiere of The Mudlark. This Royal Command film show is put on each year to raise money for the film industry's benevolent fund, and by giving it their patronage, their majesties ensure that a great deal of money is raised for a very deserving cause. The day before this year's show, the court went into mourning for the late King Gustav of Sweden. And so, after what must have been a highly worrying day for the royal sempstresses, we had the unusual sight of seeing the Queen and the two princesses entering the royal box wearing black and looking very attractive too. The film, which is very much an Anglo-American affair, the star, as you've heard, is Irene Dunne, and it was made in England by an American director, deals with a not too well authenticated incident in the life of Queen Victoria. And so we had another unusual experience on Monday, that of seeing Victoria portrayed on the screen as a stubborn, dogmatic, rather selfish old lady, with her great-grandson, our present king, leaning forward in his seat and obviously enjoying every minute of it. The Mudlark is a story of a little ragamuffin who found in the mud of the Thames Basin a medallion bearing a portrait of Victoria, who made up his mind to see the old lady himself, and who wormed his way into Windsor Castle and eventually did so, with such shattering results that, according to the author of the film script, not only did Victoria come out of her self-imposed exile after the death of her beloved Albert, but Mr. Disraeli was able to get the reform bill through the House of Commons. Well, now, our present government promise or threaten some equally controversial bills during the parliamentary session which the King has just opened, and I imagine they would be delighted if some modern mudlark could get into Windsor Castle and see the Queen with the same surprising results. True or not, I think you'll enjoy this film when it comes your way. We began this gossip paragraph on a sartorial note, and ending in the same way, it may interest the ladies to learn that among the many stars present at the premiere, Granny Dietrich was a knockout in Gold Lame, Miss Gloria Swanson a credit to any boulevard in black with about 3 miles of sables, Miss Dunn herself ravishing in an outsized white crinoline, and Miss Claudette Colbert as pretty as a picture in a great deal of brown fluffy stuff. And that, together or separately, they made all the younger stars assembled look almost as uncomfortable as one member of the audience felt in his 12-year-old tale. Goodbye.
Thank you, Alan. And it's goodbye, too, from this edition of London Column, a Radio Digest produced by Stephen Eckard, presented by Peter Watson, and which came to you in the North American service of the BBC.
That was London Column, a transcribed program. This is the British Broadcasting Corporation.